This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
This is Paul Hawksby.
And Arthur Friedenrich.
You'll discover why that's relevant in around, 10 minutes. After you've heard from Gary Lineker, who joined us on H&J today. He was good, wasn't he?
He was on good form, definitely. Yeah.
So you'll hear a bit of Gary discussing some of his former clubs and his podcasts, etc., etc. And we're going to talk bowls.
Yes.
And a world record, which we doffed our caps to one of the people that did it. So, well, here it all is on the H&J Daily. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Andy.
Yes, good afternoon, Paul. Nice evening of European football.
Yeah. Plenty of big games.
Yeah, I thought Tottenham did all right. They got a point. It wasn't the best performance they've ever put in, but it's not an easy place to go. I thought people have been a bit hard on them.
It was a bit disappointing after the way they'd played. I mean, I think Son was the determining factor at the weekend, and he didn't start. He only got a little cameo at the end. It was just the lack of urgency at times. It was almost like Ndombele and Eriksen were playing in Valbuena's testimonial.
it's like
they clapped him on. It was all a bit half-paced. I just thought, surely if you're in the midfield of a Champions League game, you expect to be closed down. You, especially when you're away from home and get when the crowd are winding them up.
Yeah.
You don't expect to be able to sort of tarry on the ball a while, do you? You've just got to, you know, I just couldn't understand the lack of urgency in the way they played. And Sanchez really is not a right-back. He's not a right-back. We saw it against Arsenal.
Why didn't
we saw
Walker
it last
Peters?
Night. I don't know. Look, he was on the bench, so he's obviously fit enough to play. But we've seen it. He's in the wrong position most of the time. He doesn't look comfortable. He gets... Anyway.
No surprise
I tend to agree with you, though. I think we may look back on it and say that's a pretty decent result.
Yeah, no surprise when Dele got the hook. It's not... It's just not happening
I don't quite see what his job is at the moment for Spurs. I don't quite see where he plays or how he fits in. I mean, that'll change, I'm sure. He needs games, but it was an odd performance, really.
It was a little bit, but it's still point to point. We've invented a new verb to Ellery, or you've been Ellery'd.
Yeah.
Gareth Bale was Ellery'd yesterday. Mm. I mean, it completely ruined that game. I mean, we've been talking about this for months. You knew this was going to happen. How many more great goals are we going to be denied? And how much better would that game have been at 2-1 at half time?
Yeah. Well, have a chat to Gary about this because he's been tweeting about today.
Yeah, so they've been talking about it a lot.
Because there's a lot of people that are looking at it and saying, well, it's no different from Thierry Henry against Ireland. It's a handball. He's controlled it with his hand and it's set it up.
No,
okay. It's interesting, but a lot of people are saying, I don't see the difference then. It's a deliberate handball. I think Gary's feeling, he says, most of the pros on there are saying, wasn't deliberate, should have been
deliberate,
a goal.
That's why. It's clear. And it was really interesting watching Madrid because I wanted Hazard to do well. Because, you know, thought he put in a great shift at Chelsea. But I was pleased to see Courtois struggling.
Right, OK. You told me, I've seen a couple of quotes purportedly from Hazard where he's had a bit of a pop at the Chelsea fans.
He
feels out of character,
no,
doesn't he?
No, he hasn't had a pop at the Chelsea fans. What he said is that fans in Spain, the Madrid fans, are more passionate than the fans in England. We know this, that fans in abroad and in South America are different to English fans. English fans have a passion in their own way. It's a different type of passion. I didn't take it as a slight, but, you know, I suppose you could do. Really, I wouldn't. And you've got to say that Bale off and leaving Hazard on the way he was playing, he was so rusty. That's P45 coaching for me. I mean, I just think it was mad. What was he doing? Bale was their best player.
We're going to have a chat with Graham Hunter about this a little bit later on. There's something is not right, really, in the relationship, you would think, between Zidane and the president.
And James Rodriguez, what a shadow of a player he was from the 2014 World Cup.
I know.
Absolutely hopeless, really. Cardi went off. I'm surprised. I didn't even know he was playing. What a strange game. And by the by, though, have you ever heard of Arthur Friedrich? This has nothing to do with last night's game. This is a new subject. Have you ever heard of Arthur Friedrich?
Have you ever heard of Arthur Friedrich? No, I haven't, no.
Neither had I. And I made a joke with somebody who was talking about him, and I said, oh, who does he play for? And he was actually a footballer. He was a footballer, and he was a great hero in Brazil in the 1930s.
I've never heard of him. Where did this conversation about Arthur Friedrich pop up?
I saw this thing on Twitter. A bloke was talking about Arthur Friedrich. And I said, who does he
play for?
He's
never had so many mentions.
I know. You look him up. He's got quite an amazing career. I couldn't believe that I'd never heard of him. But right. I hadn't.
So there you go. Any other people you haven't heard of?
So, only Arthur Friedrich.
What the only person you've never heard of?
He's Arthur.
And now you've ticked that particular
that'll be
box.
The one, yeah.
What had he done then in his career?
He was an amateur. He was the first mixed race player in Brazil.
Yeah.
He played his career lasted about 20 years. It was unbelievable.
Was he Brazilian?
Yes, he was Brazilian.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah.
Not a very Brazilian name, is
no,
it?
No, I presume that, you know, originally his ancestors from
I don't
Europe.
Think Tim Vickery would pronounce it Arthur Friedrich, would he?
Well, we'll get him on, ask him. I bet he would. Oh, Friedrich.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Adoro Friedrich.
Friedrich.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it would be something like that.
Anything else on him?
No,
could he play
else
the
him?
Spoons?
No, I have no idea. You look him up. And people will look
you
him up.
You ever play bowls for 32 hours?
Honestly, I guarantee when you look him up, you go, I can't believe I've never heard of this bloke. Well, that's what I did anyway.
It's always a joy to unearth a story like that, isn't it? When you get a real kind of just a sports story from the past you'd never heard of.
We'll ask Gary if he's ever
it's
heard of
it. It's always fantastic. That could be a very short conversation. No.
The Duke of Kent, I mentioned him yesterday.
I've heard of him.
Yeah, we hadn't seen anything from him since Wimbledon, but to be fair, he was in the court circular today.
He's resurfaced.
He went to a concert at Fairfield Field Halls.
Fetch a cloth.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Fairfield Halls in Croydon.
Nice.
I bet he thought it was an indoor tennis tournament. Obviously.
He probably did. He probably walked in and thought, where's the net? Where's the umpire's chair?
Exactly.
Everything he goes to, do you think they have to bring a little bit of tennis into it? Like if he goes to the Haberdashers Hall or whatever and there's all these blokes in ermine and they're going to have some big posh dinner, they bring in the suckling pig. Does it have to be brought in by Buster Mottram and
Perry,
Kiafavon?
Perry Suckling.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Just, when or Arthur Friedrich. There he was. He loved his suckling. But he brought the first suckling pig to Brazil. If you've got any other things that Arthur Friedrich did this afternoon to amaze Andy with, just make them up. Make them up. And we'll add to the list of the bloke you've never heard of, Arthur Friedrich. And I'll tell Andy, did you know, Andy, that Bob from Arbroath tells me Arthur Friedrich, etc. So let's add to the legend, albeit made up, of a man we'd never heard of until a few moments ago. Even members of the Friedrich family had never heard of him. That's how enigmatic he was.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Hawksby, Andy Jacobs here on TalkSport. Joining us in the studio now to chat about the book of the podcast, Behind Closed Doors, is Gary Lineker. Good to see you, Gary.
And likewise. Yeah. Likewise. It's good to be here.
As I say, a book of a podcast is an odd route, isn't it, really?
It proves how much new avenue. You've got to invent things.
The podcast didn't nearly happen, though, did it? Because I think Danny was telling us a little while ago that you thought that he was ignoring your messages.
Oh, yeah. Well, Danny's one of these... The very few people on Earth now, I think, who doesn't have a mobile phone. So I was talking about doing a podcast for ages with our production company, Goldhanger Films, and because we got one or two other podcasts going. And my partner with Tony, we were talking, he said, well, what kind of podcast do you want to do? I said, well, I don't want to really sit there and talk about the weekend's fixtures. I kind of do that on my...
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. That's the day job. And he said, well... What would you do? I said, I don't know, maybe like a fun football broadcaster thing. And he went like, who? I went, I don't know, someone like Danny Baker. So he went, that's a great idea. And I didn't really know Danny. I met him a couple of times. But we followed each other on Twitter. So I kind of thought, I'll direct message him. And he didn't reply for about 5-6 days. And I thought, oh, all right, then. And then I did another one saying, I'll take that as a no then. And then he came back.
Then he went, oh, I'm sorry, I've been away. And he says, I don't have a mobile phone. I only can do it from a computer at home and this stuff. So I said, well, let's meet up. And we met up. And he said, well, you know, sounds like a good idea. Let's have a bit of fun. And we said, well, what how should we plan it? He went, well, we won't plan it. We'll just talk. And,
yeah.
And that's kind of what we do. That's his style. And it's... And I was kind of a little bit worried that I wouldn't think of enough kind of stories to tell, because that's the kind of what we wanted to do, anecdotal stuff. But it's amazing how many things like trigger memories
that have
come back. So it's been a bit of a fun. And then the book obviously is kind of the next step on and kind of elongates some of the stories, et cetera.
Yeah, some of the stories you didn't get round to and expanding on some of the others.
Kind of, you write a chapter, he writes a chapter.
It's kind of alternates. And then there's a couple of chapters that are split. Like we do a chapter on Gaza.
You
and
do,
different Gaza
yeah.
stories that got. Funny, he just texted me, Gaza. She's always good news.
That's good.
So it kind of works that way. And we did the audio, but I've never done an audio book.
Mm.
Good Lord, that's a process.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That takes a bit of time.
So you did it in the same way? You both went in and okay, right?
What we should have done is I should have done his chapters and you should have done mine. Really confused people.
It's interesting because you're coming out from, apart from the times when you kind of overlap with Gaza and things like that, it comes at it from different angles, but it works for that reason, I think.
Yeah, I think it's the same reason that the podcast has worked. You didn't know it would, but, you know, I come at football from kind of the profession who's been in it and broadcast it all his life, and Danny comes from it as a broadcaster and primarily as a fan who loves the game. And so the stories are different and different perspectives, and it's a combination that we weren't sure would please everybody, but it really does.
He's got incredibly strong opinions. He hates VAR, doesn't he, for example?
Oh, yeah. I mean, lots of opinions I totally disagree with Danny. He comes he'll have a view on everything and particularly about football, and a lot of them I genuinely disagree, which I think is also a good thing, because it's all a bit boring, isn't it, in life if we all agree on everything. But no one agrees on anything these days. All sorts of aspects of life. But no, it's, and Danny's funny and he's got amusing. Yeah. He's got an incredible memory for various stories.
Sure.
Detail as well.
Yeah, detail. Yeah.
I like the section on cooking at the back.
Well, yeah, it's not often you get recipes in a book like this, but that was the way you would do the podcast.
From Instagram, you were a very keen cook.
It's a new passion. I've been doing it about 4 years. I love it. I got kind of obsessed and cook for my boys a lot and cook for friends. And I cook every Monday. I cook for the podcast. But when they come, there's usually, I don't know, it's probably between 6 and 10 people. Normally.
Yeah.
So I do something. It's quite limiting because Danny can't eat any spice whatsoever because he's throat cancer thing a few years ago. We've got a vegan, we've got a vegetarian, we've got this. It's
a nightmare.
But it's become a thing. And then I was talked into putting two or three of the recipes that I've used back of the book.
He raves about your minestrone soup, especially.
Yeah, it's all right.
He says you get 17 of your 5 a day from it.
You just pile it all in there.
What about Danny's tomato sandwich? Have you tried
that? It sounds gross, but I'm sure it tastes better than it sounds. Yeah.
What was your pre-match meal then? Was there one thing you were married to when you were playing?
Not really. It changed. It's, funnily enough, for a player that was immensely superstitious, particularly in my early days, my pre-match kind of meal did vary. In the early days, this is how things have changed in terms of nutrition. We had steak and chips.
Yeah.
I was genuinely eating steak and chips from probably when I was 17 to 22. At that age, it was like, my God, I'd get a steak. You never got a steak back then.
How long before the match, though, would you have
It would be, it'd normally be about 11:30, 12 o'clock. Say play at 3.
3 hours.
Yeah, I mean, take about 48 hours to digest.
You never do that would you? No one used to get stomachache.
It's interesting, coming out from a fan and a player's point of view, you are clearly a fan, and we saw that. But it's kind of, I wonder if a footballer can ever really be a fan in the same way, just a fan. It's a bit like musicians when they listen to music. They're not listening to music, they're listening to the musicians.
Yeah, I think there's a degree of truth in that. But I think what genuinely surprised me is how that after my... When you're a player, you're a player. You know, whichever club you're playing for, that's your club, and you'll inherit the hatreds or the rivalries, etc. So, you know, when I moved from Leicester to Everton, all of a sudden you have that... That loathing of Liverpool or whatever, that rivalry, should say, is probably a better word. And then went to Barcelona, it was Real Madrid, and then back to Tottenham, it was Arsenal, etc. But when you finish playing, that kind of goes away, and all of a sudden I was a Leicester fan again, and then that gradually grew and grew and grew. And to be honest, when you talk about can you be a fan again, when Leicester won the league,
yeah,
I genuinely feel that that was the best sporting moment of my life.
Wow.
And I was at no part in it whatsoever. Nothing to do with me. It was just, but it was...
It was a miracle.
Everyone did it.
Yeah.
And everyone, like, it was one of those very rare things where actually most of the country wanted the same thing. But the fact is, it was my team.
Yeah, this is the thing.
We got Leicester Spurs this week.
And I know, of course, you do retain.
It's not like Leicester because that's your hometown and the first club you play for, etc. But you do retain a bit of a thing for Tottenham, don't you?
I do to all my former clubs. Yeah. You know, Barcelona as well, massive. I know I was only 1 year at Everton, but there's still, you know, I had a warmth at all those clubs. And, you know, it's like when Leicester won the league. I just wish it had been someone else other than Tottenham who'd suffered from Hazard's, you know, equaliser towards the end. But aside from that, it was completely magical. But yeah, I do have an affinity towards Spurs. You know, I never feel the need to try and hide that.
You say a warmth. It's interesting. In the book, you talk about when you first got to Everton and they announced all the names out there. And they were a bit lukewarm day one, weren't they?
They certainly were. I remember the first game, I think it was certainly the first home game, and they announced the names of the players before the match. It's like number so and so, number seven, Trevor Stephen, number six, Peter Reid, whatever, Paul Bracewell, and then all big cheers. And then it went, I was number eight then. Yeah. They said, number eight, Gary Lineker. And it was like, there was quite a distinct sound of a lot of booing.
Oh, no.
And it wasn't coming from the away fans in the corner. It was coming from the home fans. Now, the reason was they told Andy Gray. Andy Gray was a hero. And quite rightly so, which I totally got. And it was like one of those, oh, what have I done here? I didn't go to the right place. And then I was, I think it was about three games in, I hadn't scored. And then I was getting absolute pelters in the Liverpool Echo, as you did back then as a player. And I thought, God, this is not going to be easy. Then I scored a away at Spurs, funny enough.
I remember that was a header, wasn't it?
And then I think I got three in the next match, and then two, or vice versa. And all of a sudden, I was top scorer in the league. And then gradually, the criticism kind of dissipated. And actually, by Christmas, when they read out number eight, Gary Lineker, it was all's well that ends well.
You won them over.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Hawksby, Andy Jacobs here on TalkSport. Gary Lineker with us in the studio. We're chatting about the book of the podcast Behind Closed Doors with Gary and Danny Baker. And Gary just did something in the break, which is that kind of long lineage of Match of the Day presenters. You put the glasses on, Gary. And we used to say about Dez, when something happened, if something broke at 10 o'clock or a manager had lost their job, right, you'd see Dez, he'd lean forward and he'd get his glasses. You'd think, oh, God, what's happened?
Suddenly you've got to read a bit of copy.
And now you do it. You put the bins on, something's happened.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like Walter Cronkite. after Kennedy was assassinated, something big's happened.
Yeah.
You write about your broadcast career in the book, and we just introduced you there to Joe Shannon, whose dad is Bob Shannon, who worked with you. And it was an interesting transition from the game to broadcasting for you, because it wasn't easy at first, was it?
Oh, no, I said this before, but I think I was born to be in the box, not on the box. So football came kind of naturally. Television particularly and radio when I first started doing it was hard. It took there was so many times. Bob Wilson left for ITV and I wanted to present. That was my goal because I thought if I could crack presenting in football, there might be a little niche there, because no other, you know, playing right at the top in football has done that. You know, Bob Wilson obviously was a goalkeeper and showed that was the case. Jimmy Hill did a bit of presenting but was primarily a pundit, but he was a player. But I just thought if I could crack it, there'd be a niche for me and perhaps give me a bit of longevity, which has obviously turned out to be true. But when I first started, there were so many times when I was doing Football Focus, I'd drive home on a Saturday afternoon thinking, I'm never, ever going to be able to do this. I wasn't quite bad enough for them to get rid of me, but, you know, it was kind of difficult. Because there's no way you can kind of practice doing live television.
No.
You've just, like, it's in at the deep end. And I was in at the deep end on BBC One, not, you know, some obscure satellite channel somewhere where you could learn your trade with hardly anyone watching. It was a big audience. So it was tough. It was hard. And then, I don't know, 2-3 years in, you start to get a little bit comfortable in the environment. You become yourself. You're more relaxed. And then ultimately people decide whether they like you or not. Now, obviously, all of us are dislike by some, but it's a question of the percentages. As long as they're in your favour, yeah, you're okay. Course.
Yeah, yeah, you can be fairly combative on social media, and you took the Twitter today on the football. Yeah. We're going to deal with the football stuff.
Messi, is he the greatest of all time? I know you think he is, yeah. And of course you interviewed Maradona and you played against him, so you're in a good position to compare the two.
Yeah, I think Messi's. I mean, I never thought I'd see a better player than Diego. Maradona was unbelievable, and I used to, I was so much in awe of him. It was as everyone was in those days, and. But I think when you look at Messi, he does everything and more that Diego could do. His goal scoring ratio is, pretty much a goal a game. Mm. Diego's was about 1 in 2, which is, pretty good, certainly in those days. It's a bit easier now. But also, he's the best dribbler I've ever seen, Messi, and he's as good a passer as I've ever seen. Now, Diego was great at both as well. But I think when you take into that account the longevity that Messi's done it in for what is it now? About 15 years, something like that.
What about the World same Cups, level? Though,
that, well, that's the only argument against a World Cup. But a World Cup's like a precarious business. It's a knockout played once every 4 years. Mm. So you need all sorts of things to come together. Nowadays, you could argue that in the old days because that was the only time you'd see all the world's best play in the same competition. Whereas now you see it in the Champions League, all the world's best play in the Champions League year in, year out. And he's won that 3 or 4 times. Mm. But most people don't talk about Messi or Maradona. They talk about Messi or Ronaldo. Now, Ronaldo, I'm also a huge fan of. I'm a massive admirer of him. I think he's one of the greatest goal scorers of all times. No question about that. But for me, football is about watching it and getting joy from it. And when I watch Messi play, it makes me feel joyous. It's like he does 4 or 5 things in a game that just get you off your seat. And for me, that is the difference between the two of them. And they're both spurred each other on. And I think we can enjoy them both. Mm. And it's fine to have the opinion that you think Ronaldo's better or Maradona's better. That's fine. It's just my view.
Mm. Yeah, so, it's not quantifiable, of course.
No, of course it's not.
It's not. Yeah. That's the thing about...
You went to Spain and played abroad, and we've seen kind of recently a few more players. There's some good funny stories in the book about your time there as well. That's just when you were learning the language, I did like the... When you went furniture shopping.
That's a good story.
And, use the word you didn't intend to.
Well, yeah, the Spanish for drawers is... cajones.
Yeah.
And so I went in, we were in a furniture shop, and we were looking for some bedside tables with a couple of drawers in it. So I said, we're going to do this. Estamos buscando una mesa con dos cojones, which. Now I think we all know what cojones
I think we do. Yeah.
So yeah, but it's quite hard, apparently, in those days to find bedside drawers with a couple of balls.
But would you, I mean, we've seen, as we said, we've seen Jadon Sancho do it very successfully. We've seen a few more players thinking of doing it. There was a kind of, around your time, we saw players do it. Then there was a kind of a period when it didn't happen. But would you advise it as a lifestyle? Would you tell players to do it now?
I think it's a great experience if you can do it, certainly at some point in your career. Mm. Obviously, it has to be the right club, has to be the right time. There are 1 or 2 players now. Reece Nelson was there, wasn't he? He's on loan, obviously. But Jadon Sancho, you mentioned, Kieran Trippier now at Atletico. I think it's great because it gives you a bit more of an education, and it also gives you a great opportunity to live a different culture, a different lifestyle, and the opportunity to learn a language which you wouldn't ordinarily get the opportunity to do so without going to full time school, which you're not going to do in this country. But I would definitely. Advocate it if it's what you want to do. In my time, of course, a lot of players played abroad because financially as well, it was a massively different.
Yeah.
You could earn way more abroad than you could in Italy or in Spain or in Germany than you could in the old League Division One. Mm. Whereas now that's not the case, of course.
No.
You can pay as well as anywhere in the world. So... It's slightly different in that sense. So you've got to go there for an experience and to learn different aspects of life and football.
Yeah. Did you learn any Catalan while you were there? Because that's the thing. You learn Spanish, and then people in Barcelona say, "Well, yeah, but how's your Catalan coming on?"
It was Spanish. The dressing room was Spanish.
Yeah.
Because they were from all over Spain, so it made sense to learn Spanish. I could understand a lot of Catalan when I was in there, and I had a few phrases and a bit of words. And in interviews on the radio and the TV, they'd often ask the answer. the questions in Catalan, you'd answer in Spanish.
Yeah.
Just Spanish. Odd enough, learning one language.
Yeah, I remember one, we beat Spain, you scored four goals against Spain, yeah. Didn't you? And they said afterwards, what's it like to score four goals against Spain when you play for a Spanish club? And you said, I don't play for a Spanish club, I play for a Catalan.
Well, actually, it wasn't quite that. What it was, it was the headline the next day in the local paper in Barcelona was that they have two papers each day just on the football club, basically. Yeah. And the front page headline was Catalan player scores four against Spain. It's quite my favourite headline.
I want to take you back to the World Cup semi-final against Croatia. I was interested in the book, the way you said that a game affected you virtually as a fan. Really.
Yeah. Because you weren't working that night.
No, that's right. No, because ITV did that game.
Yeah.
We'd done the quarter-final. And then we were in the ground, and obviously my main ambition when I play football, obviously, would have been to win the World Cup or win the European Championships. But my main ambition now would be to broadcast a final that involved England, whether it be the Euros or preferably, obviously, the World Cup. But so to be that close, and we sat there and watched the game. We're doing highlights, so I did a bit on the pitch after, but we sat there with Shearer and was so nervous, tension. And then we got ahead and we thought, and it was just, it was
so close.
It's tough watching.
20 minutes.
Happened before. But we're improving and we've got some great young players coming through. And I genuinely think we're going to go, you know, we're going to be seriously competitive in the major tournaments. Next summer might be a bit early for us. But if you look at, you know, Qatar after that, I think with the amount of talent we've got coming through, I think we're going to be up there as the favourites.
Greg Dyke was right. He said we're going to win it, didn't he?
Didn't they? St. George. They still got it there on, I mean, 2022, wasn't it?
Yeah, they had the countdown, didn't they?
Yeah.
So who knows? I mean, we will be one of the favourites in that competition.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
You asked me if I'd ever heard of Arthur Friedrich.
Yeah, I got his name wrong. He's brilliant.
He built 5 minutes of the show on a bloke he said you've never heard of, simply because he got his name wrong.
I know.
What is his name?
Arthur Friedrich.
He was some kind of pioneer in the world of Brazilian sport, wasn't he?
Yeah, Brazilian football.
He was football.
Brazil's first mixed race football. I think he played for about 20, 25 years sort of from the early 1900s to sort of 1930 odd.
And you said that he'd done loads of other things as well. You know, he was kind of a bit of a sort of polymath. He had an interesting story, Andy, but you couldn't tell me any more about his story. You couldn't tell me what else he'd done.
No, I couldn't. So
I invited the TalkSport listeners, many of whom actually do know what his name is, unlike you, to fill in the gaps, and they have done.
Yeah.
Arthur Friedrich was nicknamed the Tiger. That sounds like it could be true. That's from Comrade.
Probably true, I reckon.
Arthur Friedrich, wrong name, invented pulled pork, says Carl.
Yeah, he didn't. Pulled pork in 1920.
Yeah. Little known fact, on a trip to England, Arthur Friedrich found the source of the River Irk at the end of my street in Royton, says Adam. Just some of the things he did.
I do like fishing on the River Irk.
This comes from Josh in Birmingham. He said, did you know Arthur Friedrich invented Gegenpress? He also rather unsuccessful successfully tried to import the pucker pie onto the streets of San Paolo. Arthur Friedenreich was once in a band with Ian Wright and Ted Lowe. They were called Wright Ted Fred, apparently.
Marvellous.
Says Richard Johnson, who's got a bit puntastic. Some of the things we didn't know about Arthur Friedenreich, or indeed Friedenreich. One of the things we didn't know about him is that his name was wrong at 1:15. But just make him up.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
There's a new book about the war against cash. It's called The War Against Cash by Ross Clark.
Oh, yeah.
And it's this idea that, you know, basically everything's on your phone, all your cards, all your passes, everything. Fine, and people like that. But I had this the other night where I went to park at Chelsea before the game.
Oh, yeah.
And I always leave it on a meter. I'd have to put about an hour's worth in around that area. It's quite expensive, about £3 or £4. So what I do, I make sure that when I go there, I've got £3 or £4 in my pocket. I need to go and buy something, make sure I've got some change, whatever. I've done that for years and years and years. Get there on Tuesday night, no more meters. It's all phone, pay by phone.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It took me 5 minutes and 56 seconds.
Oh, mate.
I was going mad. I was going, how is this an advance over what we
Who were you
before?
Shouting at? No one in particular. No. Anybody you went past? Anybody? You frightening the kids, were you?
Yeah, I was just shouting to myself.
Shouting at the pigeons.
Honestly.
You got to download the app, Andy. Downloaded this, about two or three apps that cover most car parks.
No, I get it now.
And when
it.
You've got them, you're sorted.
Is it quicker?
You just because you came prepared like the good Boy Scout you were, most people turn up without change.
Yeah, and then for them it would be better. I get that, you know.
But I mean, no one's ever got any cash, have they?
I suppose
not. Lad who tells the big issue when I come out of the station, and you got your reader
got
yet?
A card, yeah.
No, they're getting them. They're all. The great thing is all the big issue salespeople are going to get their own readers, and I think that's going to make such a big difference.
Our producer's got his own card reader, and he likes it when we tip him.
Yeah,
he tips
that's
him.
Right. After the show, we give him a drink. It's a bit like the free fringe. We give him what we think the show was worth. So he doesn't make a great deal.
He doesn't.
Yeah.
And TripAdvisor intercepted 1 million fake reviews last year. And I was thinking, they might as well change it to takeitwithapinchofsalt.com.
Yeah.
I mean, when I use TripAdvisor, I basically, unless five or six people say the same thing, I just you always get the one and they say, this place was terrible. You think, well, everybody else liked it. What's wrong with you?
No, there was a corker a little while ago there. Somebody had gone, I was checking out a hotel and everybody had given it good marks. And then there was this kind of rogue one star. Mm. And it was from a woman who said, her and her husband had been robbed when they were in the town centre.
But that would affect you.
It's not the hotel's fault, though,
is
it?
No, it's not the hotel's fault. That's
you can't blame the hotel for
that. That's very true. Yeah. And overweight people are more likely to have overweight dogs. I suppose that's logical, isn't it? You know, it's a bit like it's the same with children.
I mean, surely, if you're on that basis, they'd have very thin dogs, wouldn't they?
Why?
Well, they wouldn't be getting many scraps, would they?
I see, that's a good point.
I don't know, I'm not a professor or an animal behaviourist or anything, but I'm just...
Oh, yeah.
Putting it out there.
One person looking particularly good, though, before we move on, is Greg Wallace.
Oh, but he's got a thin dog at the moment.
Yes. His physique looks incredible for a bloke of his age. And he's obviously, I reckon he's training.
Seemed quite keen to show it off, though, didn't he? In the
he's done that
newspaper.
Classic, tedious selfie mirror pose with the phone.
I think he was sucking in a bit, you.
Well, I'm not
Greg,
sure.
He's not sucking in a bit.
No, I think he's very defined. He's very toned. But he must have, I'd say that's about 2 or 3 hours worth a day. And he looks fantastic, but then he put the snap on Instagram and he went, getting there. You think, you're not getting
did
there.
Did he not
you've
say...
F- working on it for about 6 months to a year.
Did he not say fitness has never got tougher than this?
Something like that, definitely. So there you go.
Anything else? Is that you?
A few Arthur Friedenreich comments.
Yeah, now, Andy, in the first hour, in case you missed us, said, have you ever heard of Arthur Friedenreich? And I hadn't.
Friedenreich.
Yeah, well, no, that's the whole point, Andy. You got his name wrong in the first hour, which didn't help. I've never heard of Arthur Friedenreich either. I'd love to pretend that's where it all fell down. But Andy said he's had an amazing life story, Arthur Friedenreich. And then he told us one thing about him. And I said, what else? He said, well, I don't know anything else. So he is, what is the absolute opposite of a mine of information? That's what you are. And we asked the listeners to tell us more about Arthur Friedenreich, and I'm getting a sense they made them up, because Matt Byrne says Arthur was the first man to introduce the trouser with an elasticated gusset into Brazil. We should point out that Arthur was a great pioneer of Brazilian football. He invented the Cruyff turn, says Charlie in Birmingham. Won the first ever Brazilian Grand Prix, which was only contested by 6 cars with 3 finishers, says Jody from Essex. He invented beeswax. And he, yeah, what about that, says Rev in Reading. None of these are true. And he won the first ever annual cheese rolling at Cooper's Hill in Gloucester. So some of the things we never knew that aren't true.
Original member of the magic duo, Friedenrich and Roy.
Friedenrich and Roy, he was.
Now, hold on a minute. I've got to find, where's my WhatsApp gone? Because I want to, here it is. I've got a list here of the 50 most influential people in cricket.
Wow, what about
it's
that?
It's marvellous, isn't it? Number one, you've got Tom Harrison, chief executive of the ECB.
Can't argue with that, can you?
Yeah, number two, Ashley Giles. I won't go through all of them.
Yeah.
Ben Stokes, number four. Owen Morgan, number five. Lots of other people. Coming in at a tremendous 41, number 41, is our very own John Norman.
What about
cricket
that?
Editor, Talk Sport.
John made the top 50, did he?
Yeah. He's more influential than James Anderson.
Who was at 44.
Yeah. And Joffre Archer, 46.
Yeah.
So there you go. It's incredible, really. I'm very impressed. Only ahead of him, number 40, Sir Alastair Cook. I mean, let's see what the two people have given towards the game.
Yeah.
You can see why the worst one is Virat Kohli.
Virat Kohli is the 38th, and John Norman is the 41st most. Look, John's clearly, our friend. Far be it from us, but I would say Virat Kohli is three more in terms of influence generally in the world of cricket. This is a man that's single-handedly keeping the flag flying for Test cricket on a whole continent.
The most influential person in the entire world of cricket is Virat Kohli.
Yeah, this is a man that if he didn't champion, if he just said Test cricket, no, I can't be bothered. If he stopped playing, that'd be it. It would be three men and a dog. Wouldn't it, really?
It's true.
For most India Test matches.
Yeah.
But, so, I'm sorry, John. As much as we love you, you are not three less more influential.
I am impressed, though.
Than Virat Kohli.
I thought I'd be on the list for my Dillian White instructions.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure a cricket magazine's going to put you on a list for suggesting that Dillian White should go and punch all the England players in the face after a bad morning in the field. Not a great idea, is it?
No,
They were 67 all out, yeah, but still. Okay. Although Dillian White thought it was a good idea, he responded on social media.
That's true.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
There we are. That was this afternoon's. Oh, for Friedrich. He was spinning in his grave. I take it he is dead. He's not coming in tomorrow, is he, Arthur?
He's dead.
Yeah, okay, sorry.
In 1933.
Two different stories. Sorry, Arthur. Arthur! Okay, we'll see you tomorrow. We'll have the clips of the week and all sorts of other bits and pieces as well. Ruby Walsh will be joining us from the Rugby World Cup in Japan. That's what you always take one of the great jockeys of our time to the Rugby World Cup, don't you?
Of course.
We'll find out more about that tomorrow. Have a good evening.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4pm on TalkSport.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.